And welcome back, everybody. We get part two today, speaking with Robert Egger, who is the founder and former CEO of the DC Central Kitchen, which he led for 24 years, 7 days a week. He's been a leader in the food recovery, job training, social enterprise movement since 1989. I call him the father of social enterprise.
Well, you're being very kind.
That is my new title for you. So you're going to help us put the pieces together today and really help us move forward into the future. How do we begin this process sort of at its root in terms of our mindset?
Well, hey, thank you for having me back. It's a real honor to be, you know, with you again today, in which I keep thinking about the Beatles, phase two in which Robert gets his oats. But anyway, you know, I became mesmerized as a kid about this kind of .com/.org divide. You know, it's kind of a clumsy economic principle. And it suggests, you know, with .com you get, you know, goods and services a la capitalism, and with .org you get charity. And I became fascinated by the idea of, well, I want both. Why can't I get both? And of course, we've seen over the decades, I mean, when we were kids, for example, you went to the Goodwill, and the Goodwill took a sofa you might have donated and converted it, oftentimes offering people a chance to learn a skill while they did that. And then you bought it. You got a new sofa. Somebody got a gig. You know, the sofa didn't get thrown away. So there was a sense of, hey, man, that's good business. Everybody wins something. So I became mesmerized by this idea of everybody wins. You know, everybody gets a certain prize when they come home. And that led me to start businesses in the mid-1990s that started to say, you know, let's create jobs for men and women who need work. Let's use food that might have been wasted and support local farmers. Let's go out to the farmers and say, look, you can donate these fruits and vegetables when they're about to be rotten, or I can come out a week early and buy them at a reduced price, but at least you're getting something. And because I bought it, I can now resell it. And that allowed me to say to Washingtonians, whether it's people who went through a catering company or contracts we had for school food, and in Los Angeles with Senior Meals, not only are you getting a good meal, you're helping to support the local food economy, you're helping to create a job, and then any profit is reinvested. So it's this idea, and I must admit, there's a lot of different ways to sell products like this, and many people go to the open market, you know, and compete, if you will, in the kind of global marketplace. I'm interested in city government. Now, a lot of people would say that's a fool's errand, but the reality is government spends an inordinate amount of money on a daily basis with contracts. So whether they're food contracts or a variety of other things, government has to get a good value for the money for the taxpayers. But at the same time, they want good services so a city appears to be clean, orderly, thriving, all those kind of things. So that became very interesting. How do you work with a mayor? You know, I look at, Mayor Weber, first full-time mayor here. He actually came to visit the L.A. Kitchen when he was running for governor. I became fascinated by it. Here's a guy who started Fast Company magazine. To a certain extent, wildly open to ways in which he could, as the first mayor or his attempt to be the governor, really introduce some bold new ideas into a state that has many significant issues. And that to me is where social enterprise has the most tremendous opportunity.
You know, I do have to say, and I will give a shout out to Javier Gonzalez, our former mayor, who was behind the Project Verde project that we talked about yesterday. He funded that. He was behind that endeavor. So that happened under his leadership. And so that's where, as you say, the mayors can play a critical, vital, important role in this.
Yeah, in fact, I worked with Mayor Hickenlooper before he was governor of Colorado, is mayor of Denver. And he was the first mayor that had an office of strategic partnerships and, in effect, appointed three young women who came along and basically by helping nonprofits find each other, develop grants, pursue grant opportunities, they brought $50 million into Denver from outside Denver within 4 years. And to me, this is the kind of thing where if I'm a mayor, I think most mayors look at the nonprofit sector and at best they think, well, they do good deeds. At worst, they think, hey, these nonprofits aren't paying property taxes. I got to figure out a way to get it. But what I dream is one that says, wow, you know, these are really dynamic businesses. These people are passionate. They're really so dedicated to the community. If I can help them grow and become more stable vis-a-vis contracts with the city, this is going to be great because I'm getting, you know, by channeling money to them via these contracts, I'm getting goods and services. I have to get quality service. But I'm also helping them to sustain so they don't have to come to the citizens and say, come to our gala, come to our fundraiser. They can create jobs and they're going to reinvest profits. So to me, a generation of educated mayors is the great missing ingredient for this explosion, not just of nonprofit efficiency, but a whole new explosion of social enterprise businesses.
Right, and reducing the need for nonprofits in the begin with.
And at the end of the day, that's always been my motivation. I mean, I've always said I love my job, but I hate my business. I mean, I love what I do, but you know, at the end of the day, I had a real metamorphosis or awakening, rather, when I realized, you know, I had spent the better part of my 30s working, I mean, hard trying to come up with, you know, really one of the most efficient nonprofits in America, you know. But at the end of the day, I had to look in the mirror and say, dude, you're feeding primarily working people leftover food from restaurants, and that's never going to be right. You can make it efficient. It's certainly better than seeing food thrown away and people going hungry, but that can't be the right way to do it.
Right.
And that's what began you and I were talking about this kind of 49-51 concept of I tried to divide my brain metaphorically. 49% is always going to be how can I feed more people better food for less money?
Right.
But the 51% is how do we move beyond this? You know, how do we as a country move beyond the need for food banks and charities? And this is where I think I find the most satisfaction. But to quote, you know, Archbishop Camara, Brazilian archbishop who famously said, when I fed the poor, they called me a saint. When I asked why they were poor, they called me a communist. Sometimes, sadly, the money's in the disease, not the cure.
Yeah, and yet we are sitting on the precipice of what you call an incredible social, political, economic opportunity right now in all the issues that we're facing. So rather than see, as you say, make the problem part of the solution.
Right.
And you describe social enterprise as being economic Buddhism.
Yeah, it's the middle path between .com and .org. It's where you get the best of each. Again, you get goods and services, you know, a la capitalism, but you get diminished need for social charities at the same time. And to me, this is the moment, because not only do you have a generation, my generation, that has given diligently to charities throughout their lives, reaching a point of a little bit of frustration. There's a little bit of donor burnout. But you also have, and this is more germane, a generation of 100 million people under 35, a generation raised doing service. Virtually every single student of every single university has performed service. They had to graduate, so there is a coercive nature. But I guarantee you a big hunk of them have internalized. But at the same time, they don't want to do charity. They're looking for a new way, whether – we talked yesterday, whether it's the way I spend my money every day, whether it's where I work. But many of them dream of launching their own social businesses. And to me, this is the kind of thing that if a mayor realizes that there's an opportunity to say to a younger generation, make it Santa Fe. This is a town that wants your dynamic, best new ideas. And this city's willing to go out on a limb to do some what might seem at first to be counterintuitive, but we have nothing to gain and everything – you know, I mean, I'm sorry, we have nothing to lose and everything to gain by trying new ideas.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah, brother.
Yeah, right.
That's
on,
what I
man.
Say. That's what, as you say, right on, brother. And, you know, also, I thought it was interesting when you said when we graduate, we give kids the choice between doing good deeds or making money. And I think I would venture to say 98% of the population is torn in that struggle.
Yeah,
feels
they are.
Frustrated by it.
Well, I mean, we talked about it yesterday. And people just want to feel like they made a difference, whether it's when they leave the office or whether they leave this mortal coil. They want to think, man, I was here. I made a difference. I sent forth a small ripple of hope and daring somehow in my life. And I think if more employers recognize that their employees just want to make a difference, I mean, to me, this is another fantastic opportunity for the average business leader to recognize that whether there's employees who want that sense of participation, but there's also consumers that are looking for that connection, that if I buy this product, something good will happen for Santa Fe, for New Mexico, for America, for the world.
Absolutely. And also, again, going back to the disconnected youth, I see them as this boiling pot of possibility and energy, entrepreneurial in nature, because they're living already on the edge. They're familiar with risk. It's not as scary for them. That's a resource. that's actually a resource, that they're surviving in difficult situations. And to me, that's very close to the entrepreneurial landscape. And I can't say that enough, because once you step out of your cushy job and you're out there trying to make it in the world as an entrepreneur, and if anybody would know this, the mayor would, you're on your own.
Yeah.
You know, run, get ready, get set, go, and off you run. And you got to keep up. And it's very challenging. And yet people on these kids, I think about these young kids, like our foster kids, who are out there on their own, yet they're still here. They still have hope, you know, in their spirits and a drive to want to participate, a passion to be seen even. And that can drive passion in a business.
Well, that's one of the reasons years ago I started a thing called Campus Kitchen, saying, look, there's 60,000 school cafeterias that are closed all afternoon, all night, and all weekend. What amazing learning labs, for one thing. A great place to get service hours. I became mesmerized by intergenerational after-school gardens, intergenerational mentoring programs, snacks and meals to go for working parents made by kids in the after-school cooking program. But this idea of teaching kids, I think it's been said many times, but we're teaching kids how to get a job, not how to create a job. And I think if we taught more entrepreneurial energy, again, Americans have always been, I think that's the benchmark of our country. You know, it's what people fought and died for. It's the ability to do what you want, to chart your own course. Yet we constantly – but again, we go back to graduation day. I've done multiple commencement addresses and, again, tried to say to a generation, the future isn't giving back. You know, that's what my generation did. And it was fine. It was done with love in our hearts, but we didn't achieve what we had hoped. So, you know, we have nothing to lose by, again, saying to a younger generation – you know, man, hey, man, it's your turn. How can we support you? Not necessarily you have to fit into my box because I'm older than you.
And in your own words, it's just smart. It's smart business. Not right, not left, Democrat, Republican. It is just smart for everyone. And let's talk a little bit about changing it, the nonprofit sector, in a pragmatic way. So what are some of its limitations? You say it's designed for survival versus efficacy is one thing. What are other areas that it needs to kind of break free from or gain more support in?
Well, that's why I think many of us like social enterprise, because the philanthropic construct, you know, I'm going to make a bunch of money and give it back. We talked about that yesterday. It's deeply flawed. We talked yesterday about the feminized part of the American economy, which is the nonprofit sector, which is led primarily by women. So there's lots of things, but I do honestly believe that the sector has to kind of own its own economic strength. We are the third biggest employer in America. And as we look towards 2020, we have to acknowledge that whether it's a mayor, a city council member, a governor, a president, nobody who gets up, you know, anybody gets up in front of you and starts talking about how they're going to rebuild the American economy and doesn't talk about their third biggest employment sector, doesn't talk about the energy of 14 million voters, doesn't talk about 70 million volunteers. To me, you know, again, we talked yesterday about the baby boomers and how every morning 10,000 people look in the mirror and turn 70. And that's going to go on for a decade and a half. There's an army of those people who want to do something in their later years. So I believe a candidate who understands the power of American volunteerism, this thing that de Tocqueville, when he traveled America in the 1800s and wrote Democracy in America, he marveled at it. You know, this connectivity we have as a people. And I think that when you talk about some people might roll their eyes, but when you think about energy policy in America, the energy and idealism and patriotism of 70 million people who just want to make their community stronger. Man, if I'm a mayor, it's like, man, bring unto me these masses and let's get it on.
Yeah, and passion is the foundation and the very spirit of entrepreneurial endeavor. Period.
Right.
I mean, really, it really is what drives. It's like, wait a minute, why aren't we making this why are we
also
not making this connection?
I think it's also what consumers want. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm constantly looking for, yeah, I want a good deal, but for heaven's sakes, you know, help me, you know, help my community by the way I spend my money every day. If I know that you pay a good wage to your employees, it means that they're not going to have to go to the food bank. You know, if I know that you support local farmers, it means they're not going to have to go to the federal government and get farmed. I mean, there's so many different ways in which daily commerce is. And we talked about the difference between the boycott model of let's punish. I'm interested in the boycott. You know, how do you metaphorically channel market forces and reward great local businesses that, again, pay good money, pay good wages, reinvest in the community, support local agriculture? The more you support them with your money, the less you're going to have to contribute to charity.
And let's talk about this the limitations of the grant process and how that is flawed.
No, don't even get me started. I mean, for all intents and purposes, you know, the philanthropy is primarily, and again, it's evolved, but it's still white dudes giving away white dudes' money. I mean, it is to a certain extent redistributing ill-gotten gains. Now, no disrespect. I mean, but the reality is, you know, when you make hundreds of millions of dollars or millions of dollars, I mean, to a certain extent, you have to really look in the mirror and wonder, you know, did I inadvertently cause some damage? And so I just go back to a different way of trying to generate money. And that would, in effect, diminish the need for charity while it consistently diminishes the availability of money for grants. But you get my point. I think the experiment, as glorious as it is, of saying I'm going to make money and give some back near the end of my life has not proven to be as effective as we'd like. And I think for all of us, like, I'm not saying anybody's bad for wanting to do that. I'm just saying that as an American, I'd prefer that we had less people in line at a food bank, less, you know, food being thrown away. So I just feel like at this stage of our country, this is a moment where leaders should be really pretty daring in challenging us to look beyond this .com/.org divide, look beyond charity and good deeds and start to really think about citizenship and what does it mean to be a good citizen in this country and how do we give back through daily commerce?
Yeah, also, and you talk about the construct of philanthropy as a chokehold on innovation and growth. And also just seeing ourselves as it's the separation that nonprofits are not allowed to really talk business from money from a business standpoint, nor from a political standpoint, that we're not allowed into that political specter or even to advocate for politically.
I go back to this is deeply rooted in, again, the fact that these are women-led businesses. In my opinion, this is the last great vestige of sexism is this ginormous part of the American economy that is told shut up and feed the poor. That in effect, you know, we as for-profit companies have First Amendment rights akin to the individual vis-a-vis Citizens United, the Supreme Court decision, but charities don't. And ultimately, my attitude is I'm just as much as of the American economy as any for-profit business. I'm just as much of a viable leader. I've made payroll for 30 years without fail. You know, I'll stand up against any business community, any business person in any town and challenge them based on how long have you made payroll? How long has your name been on the front of the check? Mine's been 30 years. But the point is, you know, I think we have been told that all we're eligible for is a little bit of the leftover money at the end of the year, and we have to be silent when it comes to who is going to be elected and what are the policies going forward. And I think that time or that idea needs to be challenged.
And also compete for scraps, for the leftover scraps.
Well, and again, you know, years ago, man, I went to India because I had read in a book, and it just fascinated me to no ends, that the British never, ever had more than 3,000 officers stationed in India over a century and a half of their rule. And I became fascinated. I mean, 350 million people on an entire subcontinent versus 3,000 white dudes. And again, my pop was in the military. I understand command structure. But when I went, kind of intrigued, you know, how they do that. And it was so obvious when I got there and was at Nehru, who was the first prime minister's home, which is a museum now. But it was divide and conquer. Keep Indians divided by race, caste, geography, language, and fighting each other. And it's like I was there and it's like, oh, my God, that's the nonprofit sector in America. You know, arts versus housing. You know, I mean, we all fight each other in this arena for the scraps off the table versus stopping. As every great liberation movement has, you know, whether it's the suffrage movement, whether it's migrant farm workers, whether it's African Americans, what you name it, suddenly people stop and say, wait a second, we've been fighting each other for so long. Maybe we're not the enemy. And to me, this is the great moment for nonprofit sector to realize that, yes, we need to fund, and yes, all our jobs individually are powerful, but we represent more than just an army of individual charities. We represent, in my opinion, the best of America. You know, we are kind of that faith in our fellow citizens made manifest in that we go to work every single day trying to lift people up, not out of pity, but that sense of if I do this, our community will be stronger, our country will be stronger, our world will be stronger. And I think that energy is something that we've never effectively channeled, both politically or economically.
Right. It's literally time for unification and mobilization.
Yeah, not every day, man. I'm not asking people to lower their flag. I'm just saying, look, there's strategic moments. And let's be really, you know, kind of specific here. What I've suggested is that we should at least ask anyone who's running for office to at least acknowledge the role we play in the economy, that we are the third biggest employer in America. We are a significant sources of outside investment dollars coming to every single community. And so we said yesterday, you can't make profit without communities of faith, arts and culture, healthcare, education, things we do.
Do you think we need to create some kind of council? The nonprofits come together and
there are many.
A collective approach the mayor?
Well, I think there have historically been many attempts at councils. But again, we try to find consensus. So what I try to do is say, what are the things that unite us? You know, look, we're all judged by low administrative overhead, which is an intellectual albatross around our collective necks. B, no media covers us with any depth. And think about it, $350 billion gets donated to charity, yet the average citizen can't tell you what a good charity is except for, oh, they're the ones with the lowest administrative overhead, which again is counter to everything that makes business strong, you know, this idea of investment in your staff and all that kind of stuff. So in effect, what we have here is an amazing amount of energy and money and time and entrepreneurial energy being expended without the kind of results that we really should have. So my thing is, you know, I would like to at least elect a mayor who shows up on day one saying, in effect, I get it, you know, and I really want to find a way to support the nonprofits in our community, but also more importantly, take them to a whole new level where we get better efficiencies, we have better coordinated services, and we ultimately decrease the need for charity by the way we operate.
And demand more. We need to come together and stop selling ourselves short.
Yeah. Again, my bag is constantly been, how do I meet today's current demand but diminish future demands simultaneously? And that's a lot of what my experiments have been over the last 30 years.
Yeah, you also talk about the importance of making more political connections, like Tyson's involvement. You want to talk about that?
Well, I mean, we
have a minute left.
Yeah, I mean, we just greenwash too many companies. We allow them to do things that cause the problem, and in exchange for a little bit of money, we let them get away with it. And I think we just need to start having the courage to call out some of our donors for their behaviors.
Yeah, and you also just in general talk about accountability across the board, that maybe it's important for everyone, including the nonprofit
sector.
Well,
the joy of the internet is transparency, and I think we should race towards it as both charities, as government, as businesses, because as consumers, we should demand it.
Absolutely. So Robert Egger is who we've been speaking with, and I'm calling him the father of social enterprise. Sorry, I'll just take the risk and say that. One of the original social enterprises, DC Central Kitchen, who he's fed 30 million. What is the 30 million?
Lots.
Lots. In the millions,
joyfully,
I promise.
Joyfully lots.
Joyfully. How can people get a hold of you?
Well, I have a website, roberteger.org. So it's Robert and then Egger.org. And that's just where I put a bunch of my stuff. So if anybody's interested. But I'm going to be wandering the streets of Santa Fe looking for trouble.
And we're going to be finding you, I promise.
I look forward to it.
Thank you so much for
you
being
too,
with
MK.
Us.
You too, MK. Thanks very much.
And that does it for Tuesday's Wake Up Call. Many thanks today to State Senator Jeff Steinborn, also to MK and Robert Egger, her guest, and thanks to John Chen. I'm Tom Tropridge, wishing you a great Tuesday. I'll be back for the KSFR Midday News Break at 12:30. Stay tuned to KSFR.
Today on Here and There, after a couple of decades as a community leader and legal advocate in Oakland, California, Sister Simone Campbell went national, establishing the Network Lobby for Catholic Social Justice and traveling the country as part of the Nuns on the Bus. She recently spent a week in New Mexico, listening to poor people in Albuquerque and rural areas of the state. She'll tell us what she learned in depth on Here and There right after the 5 o'clock news.
Support for KSFR programming comes from PNM, working to move beyond fossil fuels. With a goal of becoming 70% emissions-free by 2032, PNM is proposing to close the San Juan Generating Station, replacing coal power with renewable sources, including wind and solar. PNM is working toward a cleaner environment for this generation and the next. To learn more, visit pnm.com/forwardtogether.